Welcome to the Teacher Nerds Podcast. Joe and Ron are self-proclaimed teacher nerds, geeking out on all things education. They are looking to move educational practices out of the 1900s factory worker model to a student-driven classroom full of empathetic, creative, and collaborative students willing to take risks. Join them as they chat with educators from around the world, discussing educational tools, techniques, ideas, policies, and much more. Thank you for listening and becoming one of the Teacher Nerds. And now a word from a sponsor.
Well, have you heard about the nerds? What's the word? Teacher Nerds. You can tweet them out on Twitter. You can find them on the gram. After listening to their podcast, you'd be sitting there like, bam! Trying to take the teaching from one level to the next. Reaching up to Canada and down to Mexico. Gotta go. Teacher Nerds. Start the show.
Hey, welcome back to the Teacher Nerds Podcast. I'm Ron Nober.
I'm Joe DiPaolo.
I am a technology teacher for third to eighth grade.
And I teach third grade.
And today our guest is Casey Freed Jennings from Girl Rising. Casey, welcome.
Welcome, and thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming.
Our pleasure, yeah. As always, we're going to jump into our icebreaker, and then we'll let Casey introduce herself. Our icebreaker, as you know, is our two yes mores, one no way. And today it is ice cream toppings. It does revolve often around food. So
that makes sense to me. Good.
Memorial Day weekend, unofficial kickoff to summer. What greater topic than ice cream toppings?
Yeah, there you go.
It's time for two yes more, one no way.
I'm going to go ahead and start. My two yes mores, one would have to be peanut butter. And I know it's not a typical ice cream topping, but there is a ice cream shop near us and it has soft serve and you can dip the soft serve into peanut butter and then it hardens as like a shell. So a good chocolate ice cream with the peanut butter shell is like a Reese's peanut butter cup ice cream. So that's my one yes. My second would have to be hot fudge. You know, a good hot fudge.
That one. I understand.
I could see as I was saying peanut butter, Casey's like, what is going on?
There were crickets.
I mean, peanut butter and chocolate are a wonderful combo, but as a topping?
Casey's beginning to question her involvement in this whole thing. My one no way would have to be like fruit on ice cream, like strawberries and things like that is just not my, if I'm going ice cream, you can leave the fruit out, you know, same thing. Like if you're going pizza, you can leave the cauliflower crust.
That's just wrong.
You know, Joe disagrees here.
You know what?
Cauliflower on your pizza? Seriously?
No, cauliflower crust.
No, they make crust out of cauliflower. So if you were lactose intolerant,
gluten.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna lie. Someone twisted my arm, and I do like cauliflower. Yeah, I couldn't tell the difference.
I don't know about that. So those were mine. Casey, you're up.
Well, mine's pretty easy. The first one is hot fudge.
Can't go wrong.
And the second one is hot fudge. There's just nothing in the world like good hot fudge. Nothing. And I'll put it, that's where I will, I won't put it on fruit, but I will put it on sorbet. Like if you like raspberry sorbet with hot fudge is delicious. Lemon sorbet with hot fudge. Joe's grimacing, but he's wrong.
Because it doesn't sound right.
Tastes right. Give it a shot.
Hey, look, man, you do cauliflower crust pizza. You can try lemon sorbet with hot fudge.
I know he lost all his credibility there. No way is easy. Not chocolate.
Anything that's not chocolate. Hey, that was pretty easy.
If you push me, I'd have to say something like banana, but I come from a long line of chocoholics.
I was just going to say, we know what to get Casey if we ever have to get her any type of gift.
This is actually true. And it's, I think my family is actual proof that the chocoholic gene is dominant. Because my grandfather married out of the fold. My father married out of the fold. I have cousins who married banana people and vanilla people. And no child has been born anything other than a chocoholic, ever.
What do you have against bananas? That's twice now within the last 2 minutes.
Oh, bananas, banana as a banana is a fine thing.
Okay.
But it doesn't belong in or with ice cream.
Okay, I understand. See,
you know,
I'm personally, ice cream's not top on my list in the summer. I'll eat it, but Bron and I are both based out of Philadelphia, and so I'm a big water ice guy or ice pops. But if I had to choose, like if Mr. Softy's coming down the street, my one topping is going to be Jimmy's. I want chocolate soft serve with chocolate Jimmy's.
Wait, and they're not sprinkles?
No, because sprinkles are the rainbows.
I thought Jimmy's was Boston.
No, but I don't, it's definitely Philadelphia.
Is it? I thought it's definitely Boston too.
Okay.
So the chocolate soft serve with chocolate Jimmy's. If it's not soft serve ice cream, I want chocolate ice cream and the topping would be a cherry. And not, you know, fruit cherries, but the maraschino cherries.
Okay. Oh, that's even worse.
No way.
That's not really a cherry.
The more cherries, the better.
It's like manufactured food of some sort. Yep. Chemicals.
Yeah, there is no maraschino cherry tree out there anywhere.
If there was, I'd have two in my backyard. They were my favorite cherry growing up. And my no way would be everything else. The peanut butter sauce, the hot fudge, and you know, not being an ice cream guy, I don't like anything besides chocolate ice cream with either chocolate Jimmy's or the best of all, the maraschino cherry.
What about cauliflower? They can make crust out of cauliflower. Surely they can make an ice cream topping out of cauliflower.
You roast a little cauliflower in the oven. It's delicious.
I agree with that. Just not on my pizza, not on my ice cream.
Oh, I'm telling you, are you in New York? You're in New York, right? There's got to be great places to get cauliflower pizza in New York.
I am sure there is, only because there are all those gluten-free folks who need
And if you're going to try gluten-free, try it at a high-end place. I mean, obviously, I'm not twisting any arms on this show, but that's okay.
No, I actually believe you. I believe you.
It's
tasty. I thought when Ron was talking about cauliflower on pizza, I really thought he meant like cauliflower on pizza.
Yeah. Well, how about...
It would have been inexcusable.
But the broccoli and tomato white pie.
No, you don't muck with pizza. It's got pepperoni. It's got mozzarella. It's got tomato sauce.
Oh man, I
sausage. You have sausage on pizza. Yeah.
Crumble sausage. Salad, a salad, and your pizza.
How about? Well, okay, I'm not even gonna.
Weren't for the Jimmies, I'd be worried. And the maraschino cherries, I'd be worried we had a health freak in our midst.
My palate is so refined and exquisite.
Well, Casey, thank you for indulging us with that. We have a lot of fun with that. And now we're going to take a little break, but we'll be back in a moment. Are you looking to encourage your students to think about important political, cultural, economic, geographic, and gender issues? Bring Girl Rising into your classroom. Girl Rising is a powerful film that travels the globe following 9 unforgettable girls who face daunting barriers to their education, but stand up to them with fortitude and determination. Curriculum from Girl Rising includes teacher guides, project-based lessons, and issue fact sheets. There's even a Flipgrid library with over 30 topics for teachers and students. It doesn't matter whether you teach elementary school, middle school, high school, or college. Engage and empower your class. Visit girlrising.org to get started today. And now back to the show. So, Casey, can you just kind of tell our audience a little bit about like your journey? Because you're not necessarily from education in the beginning. So how you've gotten to this point with Girl Rising?
Yeah, well, it's sort of a confluence of things. I mean, going back, you know, thinking back on sort of growing up, I grew up going to an international school. So my friends were from all around the world. I didn't have too many American friends as a little kid. You know, my best friends in first grade were Syrian and Hungarian and Russian and were Soviet in those days and Pakistani and whatever. And I also came from a family. My mother was very much a political activist and a social justice activist. So I got dragged around on peace marches and, you know, and civil rights marches and things like that as a little kid. And my father made documentaries. So there was sort of all that milling around in my bloodstream. But I was a journalist by trade and began, well, I began when I was in college and spent, I went to college in the Northeast, but I went down to Nashville every summer while I was in college and worked as a reporter. But then moved to London and began working for ABC News while I was in London. And our coverage area there was Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. So I began to get the chance to see quite a lot of the world doing that. And then I returned to the US and was based for ABC News in our Atlanta, Georgia bureau. And spent a lot of time covering mostly the southern United States, but also national stories around the country, increasingly around the country. And eventually, ABC created something for their evening newscast called the American Agenda, where we actually had beats, coverage areas that correspondents and producer teams were assigned to. And mine was called the Family Beat, which really meant covering family issues and social policy. And though there was a separate education beat, we overlapped a lot. So I started encountering a lot of teachers and a lot of issues about education, and certainly issues of educational equity and equity in general, and economic equity and all those things. And as you well know, they overlap with education in a pretty major way. So that all was sort of part of the work I did and my interest, and I became I was always very interested in those social policy issues, but they became more and more, for a time, the focus of my work. I then went on to work for 2020 and did a whole bunch of other kinds of stories and issues. It was a primetime magazine show. It is a primetime magazine show. And then I left ABC at a certain point and began working with a documentary production company. And, you know, those things morphed into other things, whatever. But eventually, and this is how we get to Girl Rising, I was with a company that I helped co-found called The Documentary Group. And we were asked to investigate global poverty with the eye towards making a film, extreme poverty, the kind of poverty that people live on a couple of dollars a day. And we were looking at why it persisted, what were the causes of it, what were the solutions? And much to our surprise, pretty well, the whole range of people we talked to would pretty quickly come back to this idea of if you really, really want to alleviate poverty, educate girls. That educating girls was one of, if not the best, most effective way of alleviating poverty. And that was because of, you know, all the barriers that girls face to education, which are barriers to their independence and barriers to the success. So that's child marriage, that's gender violence, that's modern day slavery, it's cultural tradition, religious tradition, as poverty itself, and all of those things that happen because people are poor. So those are the barriers, and those are the things that keep girls from school. But the really exciting part of it that we learned was what happened when girls, you know, do go to school, and that's just, everything changes for everyone, you know, and so we can get into more of that later. I'm not sure that's where you wanted to go with this now. But so we stumbled in, and the point is we stumbled into Girl Rising by being asked to and paid to do some research about poverty.
Well, that's pretty amazing. Like just the happenstance, you know, of that created something, you know.
Yeah, and we certainly never expected that to turn into this.
Right. So can you give us a little bit of an overview of what the documentary is about?
Yeah, I mean, if you don't mind, I'm going to back up just a little bit because we actually did that research and the person who paid us to do it wasn't interested in that film. That is the film about girls' education. And so we, though, on the other hand, were so excited by what we had heard, because now people talk about it a lot, but this was sort of 12 years ago-ish, something like that. And really, people outside the development community weren't talking about it very much. So it was like we describe it as this sort of eddy, this whirlpool, and all of this knowledge was going around, this conversation was going around and around, and it wasn't slopping over. No one else was hearing about it. And the other thing that was really exciting to us about it was it was grounded in a really basic, fundamental truth. It was an indisputable truth. And as a journalist, you know, you don't come across that very often. You know, the truth is really pretty complicated most of the time. And there are usually multiple truths. But there was a purity about this one. So in other words, you could discuss why girls aren't educated. You can debate the issues. You can debate what to do about the issues. You can even debate whether girls should be educated. But what you cannot debate is what happens when they are educated. The facts are there. And so that was the purity of that was really exciting, because you can wrap your head around it, right? It's not, here you're taking this giant, giant issue of global poverty that seems just insurmountable and complicated. And it is complicated, and maybe it's insurmountable, but I hope not. But here is actually a way forward. And it's also complicated to, you know, to get all girls educated, but it's doable. And it's something you can talk about it, and something you can do something about. So that really excited us. And so we really wanted to do this. And because we thought, if we hadn't known this, and then we started talking about it and found out our smart friends hadn't known it, and their smart friends hadn't known it, and we were all well-traveled. We had all lived in other parts of the world. We had all traveled in the developing world, but we didn't know this. So that meant there were a whole lot of people who didn't know it. And we figured if we got excited about it, so would everyone else. And if we wanted to do something about it, so would everyone else if they knew about it. And so we decided that we were going to make a film, and we were going, but we also decided that we wanted the film really not to stand on its own, but to be created as the centerpiece of a campaign that would sort, that would support a global movement that was already beginning to happen. And so we did something very unusual, which is we actually started the campaign ahead of the film. Mm. So we launched Girl Rising 4 months before we released the film. And so in the process of making the film, and I'll go back to the film itself in a minute, in the process of making the film, we were building our partnerships. So corporate partnerships, community partnerships, partnerships with nonprofit organizations, with educators, with all of those things. So the idea was to create a community that would be ready to use this powerful tool once it was ready.
That's a smart idea. That's a great idea.
Yeah, no, we didn't know what we were doing. We were pretty sure we could make a good film because that's what we did.
Right.
But we didn't know anything about the rest of this stuff. So it was sort of, I sort of joke around that it was like, you know, Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney, you know, let's put on a show and you just sort of do it. So, yeah. So the film was made with that in mind. So the film was made to be really, really useful. And as you know, the film tells 9 separate stories about 9 girls growing up in different countries in the developing world. Each of them confronting the barriers to their independence. And as we say, you know, as I say, the films deal with the really hard issues that girls face and the challenges that girls face and those barriers. But in the end, they're really about hope and they're about promise and they're about potential and they're about what can and what should be. So it was really important for us to do as best we could to try and make the films as authentic as possible, to allow the girls' stories to be as authentic as possible. And we were a bunch of people from, you know, most of us were from here in the US and not from these countries. And, you know, so what Richard Robbins, the director, came up with, which I think was super clever, and the executive producer, Tom Yellen, was this idea of pairing each of these girls with a woman writer from her own country to help give voice to the story. And what Richard also did, which I think was actually genius, was he committed to allowing the writer to make the final selection of the girl.
Hmm.
Wow. And then a well-known actor voiced each of these stories. And each of the stories is told differently. So in some cases, we use animation. In some cases, the girl acts as herself. In some case, the girl is herself in more documentary style. And in a few cases where it was not safe for the girl to be in the film at all. We used actors.
Wow. Yeah. And but the point. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was saying, but the point being that the film could be seen as a whole, and it was in movie theaters, on television, CNN broadcasted here and broadcasted globally as well, and in screenings and community settings and other things like that. But it could also be shown in these bite-sized pieces.
Right.
So you can look at the whole thing, as I said, or you can watch a 30-minute version with three of the stories, or one story at a time, and we'll get into the value that has to educators and being able to sort of slice and dice it. But it also had enormous value as a tool and a campaign and a movement in creating it that way.
So it's interesting. Like, I've used it, you know, the film, and this is my first year. It was March when I found out about it, and just, I had said to you earlier before we started recording, was it touched my soul. And I think part of it was, when you look at these, I teach third grade to eighth grade, I can see girls in my classroom in every one of the girls that you see in the film. And it's you know, watching clips of them, like, I have to watch them prior to my classes watching them, because I actually get emotional watching them. I don't mind getting emotional with my class, but I want to be able to compose myself and teach, you know, and not be choking back some tears. And it's not just tears of, you know, like a heaviness, but it's, you know, like the little girl Wadley from Haiti, like, just this little girl's power about herself and her, you know, go that she is going to go to school no matter what.
Well, I always, you know, I've seen it, 100 times probably. And every single time when it ends, I've just got this big, huge grin on my face, because that moment when the teacher lets her stay and she just smiles, because that smile is so crazy infectious, right? Yep. I'm crying and smiling at the same time. And that's on the 100th screening of it.
Right.
But it's interesting. I want to pick up on something you said. You said that you look around and you see some of the girls in your class in the girls in the film. What's interesting to me is, I think most girls and some boys see themselves in some of the characters, but I think that's part of the strength of it, is that young people see themselves in those girls, even though they might be as different as can be on the surface.
Sure. Well, and it's something that I think they can easily relate to, right? I mean, going to school, they're all going to school. I think that the big, you know, thing that comes out of it is how many kids, and I think even now, maybe a little bit more than before, like, you know, maybe 2 years ago, when you got to be off from school, you were excited. But now with the pandemic and students being remote, they have a small taste of that wanting to be in person in school.
Yeah.
You know, so they now, I think, maybe relate even a little bit more to the story and the people in the story than they have in the past. Just for about the documentary, if we can stick with that for a second, the girls that were featured in it, do you all, as a group, do you all keep in contact? Do you know how these girls are doing as women now?
We committed to them and to their families that we would support their education as far as they wanted to take it.
Wow.
And their support their siblings to some extent as well. So yes, we know a lot about 7 of the 9. We lost track with a girl from Egypt basically immediately, and it's likely that she was indeed married off at 13. We don't know that, but and in every case, we were partnering with a nonprofit organization who worked on the ground in these countries. And in supporting the girls in the years since, we continue to work closely with the nonprofit organizations, and they lost track of the girl in Egypt, and we were unable to find her. We tried a couple of times, but we also felt strongly that our greatest responsibility was first to do no harm, sort of like the Hippocratic Oath. And we knew that if we pursued it too strenuously, we might in fact make her life a lot more difficult. And so we chose at a certain point to back off in that case. And the other girl, woman now, who we are not in touch with, but were able to sort of follow from a distance for a time, is the Afghan woman, Amina, Afghan girl Amina.
Okay.
But we know these last we heard she was fine. The others were very closely in touch with. I regularly email with Suma, one of the girl from Nepal, who was a slave basically for till she was 12 years old. She writes in Nepali, and I go to Google Translate, and we have. And you know, I don't. It struggles a little bit with the translation, but we are very closely in touch. And especially since COVID, she's been writing a lot. She's in college now.
Wow, that's awesome.
Her story is actually remarkable because she had to work very, very, very hard to catch up in school, having not been educated. And they have an exam in 10th grade that you have to pass in Nepal in order to continue school. And very tiny percentage of former Kamlaris, and that's the system of indentured servitude that Suma lived with, a very, very small portion, I think 6 or 8%, something like that, ever passed this exam. So she didn't pass it the first time. I think she didn't pass it the second time. I think it was probably the third time, but she kept doing it. Meanwhile, she got a community health certificate. She opened a little stationery store to support her family, yet she kept focusing on it, and she passed that. And then she just this past year, again, after a lot of effort, passed her 12th grade exams. And so now she's in college, but she's in lockdown now because Nepal's a mess with COVID at the moment. So that's very tough. She said sometimes she can't find food because the stores are closed. Wow. So I think she's having a tough time of it right now. But she sent me the most beautiful picture the other day of her just with this huge smile, and she looked gorgeous. The Cambodian girl Soka she came here to college, and she graduated from college here with a degree in hospitality. And she is now the assistant manager of the Regency Club at the New Hyatt Regency in Phnom Penh, Cambodia.
Wow.
She's a little boy. Named Bot, and I'm very closely in touch with her as well. She's actually furloughed now because of COVID. And let me see who else. They're all, Wadley is still in school. She's finishing up high school. Roxana, who is from India, is finishing up high school. It's unlikely that she will choose to go to college. We are hopeful that she might choose vocational school of some sort, which we'll continue to support.
Sure.
Pasmera, who is from Ethiopia, and her story was about child marriage. And it's a story I just love because it just shows her brother as her ally. It was her brother who stepped up and said, no, she won't be married. I'll sell my cow if I have to, but she won't be married. She decided not to. I mean, she stayed in school for several years, but decided ultimately to leave and to work with her mother. They have a dairy cow or cows. And so she works in that business. Senna from Peru also is a college graduate.
Wow.
She's the one who came from this god-awful gold mining community, 17,000 feet up in the Andes. I mean, just apparently an incredibly difficult place to live. And
it was the highest inhabited.
Yeah. That's what we're told in the world. And she moved after the film. We helped them move down the mountain to a small city or to a city down the mountain. And she finished school and then went to college.
That's amazing.
And she has a little girl who I think is about 4 years old now. So she was the poet. She's not writing so much poetry now at the moment, but she has a job. So she's working.
That's great. That's awesome.
Right? I probably missed someone in there, but.
No, I just, you know, it was nice to know that almost like a continuation of the story, you know, to see some of the end result come out.
Yeah. You know, as I say, look, is it likely that these girls would have wound up in college if they hadn't done the film? No, because they probably wouldn't have had the resources. So, you know, but what it says to me, you know, we tend to think of them as special and extraordinary and all of that. And as I always say, the best thing about it is they're not extraordinary at all. They're just girls.
Right.
And had we picked any of the other 130 million girls out of school and given them the same support, they may well have succeeded just as well. You know, all they needed was a chance.
I was just going to say and opportunity, support. Right?
Opportunity. Given that, that's exactly, given that. It's just opportunity. And you know, and to see them and to see the determination. And yes, we did. Ultimately, they were selected. And, you know, I'm sure the film team saw something in the girls, you know, that they chose. But nonetheless, I think they're very representative of tens of millions of other girls.
Right. Well, as a third grade teacher, like Ron says, he sees the kids in his class. You know, you see the girls and I'm a little hesitant to bring it down to third grade, but seeing what you guys are doing, seeing what Ron and Julia Fliss are coming together, you know, I could see little girls needing the opportunity to fight for what they believe in and to be able to speak on what they care about and to give them a voice and to throw those opportunities out. And we weren't using Girls Rising last year, but we were allowing these girls to fight for what they care about. And you just see, you know, I think, Ron, we've talked about it before, like a strong, independent woman isn't necessarily considered a strong, independent woman in a man's world, right? There are certain terms that they would use for them that would be very different for a man, right? So like those leaders and the one quote I thought on the website, it said one way to combat climate change.
Yeah.
Would be to educate girls.
It is. That's our next huge project, in fact, which we can talk about, I hope, a little bit. But
yeah.
We're going to, you know, that's our next really big, our next series of films will be about girls and climate change.
I almost feel like you have to educate girls and then maybe educate boys to how to be, I don't want to say more like girls, but more have those qualities that maybe the girls come more natural to the girls.
Well, you know, one thing that's really important to us, despite the name, is for people to realize this isn't just for girls or about girls.
Right.
You know, the Girl Rising is every bit as much about and for boys. And in fact, that, you know, the allyship I referred to before is incredibly important. And there's some very important male characters in the films. And it's obviously so important that boys support girls. And right. Support their sisters and support their mothers and support their, you know, and fight for them in those places where they need to be fought for. So, yeah, one thing I wanted to say, Joe, that you had referred to is being concerned about bringing it to third grade. You know, one of the really good things, again, about the structure of the film is you can just use Wadley's story.
Yeah,
that's well, exactly what I was
going
to say.
Not Wadley. Use the story that Amina's story, which is much obviously more tense or intense. So there are, you know, there are a couple of stories which I think definitely can be used for third grade.
Yeah. Well, Wadley's perfect for third grade.
When you guys were talking about taking little clips out,
yeah.
You know, I started to think, well, maybe I can find a way to bring it in.
Yeah. Well, there was one teacher who even used it in pre-K. Don't ask me how. But it's so people have been very, you know, one of the things we are thinking more about, though, is how to create some resources for even younger, you know, our resources really start for upper elementary and above. But to think about lower, I'm not sure about pre-K, but, you know, second, third grade.
Well, and I think that's, you know, Joe, the kind of beauty of it is, talking about all of the, like, pulling clips, you don't have to pull clips because you all have done that for everybody. Each girl is a chapter and has a YouTube video. So, like, Wadley has her YouTube video. So you don't even have to do anything as a teacher. It's already done for you.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
On the Girl Rising YouTube channel, which is beautiful. Okay.
Yeah, that's what we tried to do. You know, we tried to make it, as I say, as user-friendly across the board as possible.
Yeah. So
and the thing is, you know, the reason, as Ron, you were saying, you know, it can be used, or I don't remember this before we started taping, but that it can be used across all subjects and disciplines.
100%.
And, you know, or you can decide, you know, if it's, say, you're doing, you know, geography, right, and you're interested in a certain part of the world, you can use that.
Yep.
Or if you're interested in the issue of child marriage, there are three stories you can use on that. You know, so there you can do it by issue, you can do it by subject, you can do it by, you know, any variety of things and mix and match them. So it makes it sort of fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it does mean teachers do have to give it some thought.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, the thing is, like, this episode, our podcast episode, is going to air in, you know, June, the end of June. Summertime is a great time to be able to maybe plan out, you know, how can I now maybe fit this in come September.
And I think we now have such a variety of resources available and that make it really easy now. I mean, you know, we have the new Flipgrid stuff. I don't know if you guys know the Flipgrid platform.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a free platform for educators. And we have, at the moment, 30 topics, Girl Rising topics on there. We're going to have 50 before the end of the year, which is a very simple way of teachers approaching it. It's a very simple way for teachers just to digest the material, whether they want to use it in that form or not. But it's a really easy way to learn the material and learn the stories. But we also have, in addition to having these, they call them topics about each of the girls, we have a whole range of issues, and not only this sort of issues like child marriage and that sort of thing, or gender violence, but issues like resilience.
Right.
And using poetry, you know, and poetry and using art. And so there are all these different ways of, again, of using Girl Rising that are interesting.
And I think that's something I, you know, was on the webinar with you all yesterday. And I almost, I don't say I kind of, after the webinar, I almost like beat myself up a little bit, because I had, in my use of it so far, I kind of, almost it was having the students that I work with look at it as a woe is me kind of thing for the girls in the film. And I think it was you had mentioned something of the positives that the film holds. And you know, I kind of sat back after the webinar. I sat here for probably a good 15 minutes. I was like, man, like, yeah, why? It doesn't have to be the negative. Like, I mean, definitely you have to touch on that as to why.
Yeah, of course.
But there's so much positive that you can see at the end, and so much for the students to be able to take hold of and maybe even learn something from.
Well, yeah. And I think, you know, for us, the point was we were looking at doing this as a way of showing you there's a solution. What's the solution? It's these powerful, determined, resilient girls who come out of these situations, right, who face these challenges, but they do face them and are driven, you know, and determined. And that's really positive, and that's really optimistic. And so much of what we hope young people get out of those stories, aside from, of course, learning about these issues that are out there and that are real, but we want them to learn about using their own voices and understanding their own stories and the power of their own stories and their own agency, you know, and their role in creating change. And also how fun it is to be part of change.
Yeah.
You know, so for us, very much what we want to get across is through these stories of these girls who have all this stuff going against them, yet have their voices, find their voices, use their voices, that we all can. If they can, so can the rest of us. And for young people who are more fortunate than these girls may be, perhaps, well, that's even better.
Right.
You know, you've started with opportunity and now you can use it.
Well, and I think it reminded me of like Joe, I think, was it last year? Joe had two third grade girls who they put together I guess they were determined to play lacrosse like boys. They wanted to be able to check and hit like the boys
do. For them.
You know, and they started making little videos about it, and you know,
we had girls this year that wanted something, and I said, all right, well, if we want to make this happen, you got to talk to the principal. And we set up a time for them to go talk to the principal, and they talked to the principal, and they came back and they got it. They got what they wanted. And they're like, we want this. I said, all right, well, this is what's going to happen. You know, they have to be Jude. She's like, okay. And next thing you know, they went back, they got that, you know, now they're watching movies. Their lunchtime, that was 40 minutes of just them eating lunch for 5 minutes and sitting there for the next 35 minutes. You know, they're watching videos about the SDGs on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And then they get to watch a movie on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. They wanted to try and bring class pets in, so they had to go talk to the nurse. And then they came back and they're like, well, we probably can't do it this year. So we're thinking for, so it's just cool to see these little girls come together and say, this is what we want. This is what we want. Right. And we talked to the one mom. And she's like, I'm so worried because is she bossy? Like, is she nice when she's doing? I'm like, well, no, she's not. I don't want to say she's nice, but she wants something. And she's working her butt off for it. And it's not like she's not being, you know, not nice, but she knows there's a goal. And she's
Has any mother or father ever asked you if their son was bossy?
No.
Exactly. And that's it.
And I that's why I said it. And that's the where we started the conversation. Yeah. You know, like I said, I want to give her these experiences in third grade because it's those types of skills that leaders should have. And if this girl's exhibiting them in third grade, so she can use that energy to kind of grow up to be the leader that I know she could be, the girl I co-teach with knows she can be, and her mom knows she can be as well. And her mom's just worried, like, she's going to get that label. I'm like, well, that's why it's so important now to give her those opportunities. And I don't want to say show her how to do it right, but just show her how to become the leader that she already is.
Yeah.
And I mean, she is the most determined. This little girl's a firecracker, and it's so cool to see her like, I want this and I want this. And I think we should do this. And we do a scratch off system in our class, and she won a scratch off to teach the class. And she's like, all right, I'm going to teach the class. And I think we should start doing this with the rows. And I think we should have the opportunity to win stickers, and the stickers should be this at the end. And I'm like, holy crap. I said, you know what? We're going to do this next year too. Like, I know you're not going to be in here, but it's just really cool to give them the opportunity and watch them go. And I think if they don't have that confidence, you know, you're going to see the boys shoot them down, and not just being boys because they don't know, like, you know, the girl should have the opportunity to run the game or to run the activity, or you want something, then this is, you know, to get that opportunity to work for something they want and to pursue their passions or to find their passion, right? Like, you might not be an expert at something today, but maybe you don't know what that expertise is. And if as a teacher, I don't give you the opportunity to find it, then shame on me, you know? And I don't know if I went off topic. Sometimes when I start talking,
no, it's not. I think it's very much what we're talking about. And that's exactly what it is. And I think that kid would be super inspired by Wadley and Suman and the rest of them.
And that's the thing, like, we show them, you know, we introduce the SDGs and they're like, you know, foaming at the mouth, and they're passionate about this and that. And, you know, to let them run with it, to start off at an early age when all that passion is there and that excitement is there. And, you know, I say it all the time, we hope that it gets fostered from, you know, I'm in third grade, so I would love to see it fostered fourth through eighth in our school, because if they're doing this in third grade, holy smokes, if they're given that opportunity and chance and nurture, and I'm not, you know, everything's not always coming up roses, but I think those are the opportunity, you know, those fail. It didn't work. They wanted a class pet, but I was like, you know what? You make it work. I said, there's allergies. You got to talk to the nurse first. They went to the nurse. They came back. They wanted to change it up because maybe they wanted a specific type of bunny, because hypoallergenic and some people, you know, it was at 8 years old, 8 and 9 years old, they're working this. So give them
what are they going to do next year when they move to a new class?
Well, and that's why they were like, let's wait till next year to do it, because there's only a couple weeks left to school. And they're like, Mr. Apollo just take it home.
Apollo's like, no, he won't.
Well, you know what? I wouldn't want to, but if they, you know, and this all came from our persuasive writing unit. So it's like, you know, they're taking things we're doing through the curriculum and they're running with it and making it their own. So yeah, do I want a bunny or an iguana in the classroom? No, but if they work it, then
you could talk to the nurse in quiet and get the nurse on your side.
But you know, like, no, if I see the passion, it doesn't matter if I want it or not. Yeah, it's not about me. And you know, as a teacher, sometimes that's tough because you're in charge of the classroom, right? And you got to make it run smooth. And the principal's going to walk in, and you know, parents are going to want to know. When you come down to it, if you're trying to give them real life experience to prepare them for real life, then yeah. if that's wrong, then I guess I don't want to be a teacher because yeah. I just don't want to make them memorize facts.
Sounds like a great class to me.
Even in eight years old, everyone's got one of these yeah. and they say all the time, Mr. Paula, do your Hey Siri. Because, you know, we're out in the class and they want to, I'm like, because it's right there. But now yeah. what are you going to do with the information? Ron, we talk about that all the time, which is why we, you know, that using technology for social good, yeah. Girl Rising lends itself perfectly, which yeah. I guess now my summer work with Ron is going to be working it into the classroom next yeah. year. Yeah. At least the one little girl story.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm up. I'm ready to work with you and we'll get
on. I think there are two or three you could do, you know, if you I would look at if I were you and see if they work widely for sure. But I think also Soka and probably Roxana. There's one little tense moment in Roxana's story, but.
Well, and I guess it'll all depend.
Also, setting it up is everything too.
Right. Well, and then, I was just going to say, like the kids that I have in class, my next year's class is going to look a lot different than this year's class just because of the classroom that I'm going to be leading next year. I'm going to be leading a different type of classroom. So still third grade, but we're going to be meeting anyway for working on our teacher nerd stuff. So try and slip that in there as well.
So Casey, if somebody out there who, like I said, didn't know much about Girl Rising before they listened to the podcast and wanted to get involved, could you talk about what are some of the things that you all have on the website? What are some of the resources that you have available?
Sure. I mean, as you know, because we've talked about this before, our goal in Girl Rising is to reach as many people as possible, and particularly young people, because they are so key to change, right? And they're the future. And we work in 11 countries, and our U.S. program is largely our U.S. educator program, which is trying to reach as many young people as possible through their educators, through their teachers and facilitators and mentors and that kind of thing. So our resources are aimed at that. We have, on the one hand, a very robust curriculum for upper elementary, middle, and high school, and that includes viewing guides for the films. It includes teacher guides, country guides, issue guides, and project-based lessons. So those are all there and give you sort of everything you need to do that. And with recommendations, of course, about which stories, or we call them chapters, which film chapters to use at which levels. We have, we created a new resource this year because of COVID, a web-based module, which can be used completely remotely or can be used in hybrid or in-person learning. And it can also be student-facing if that's what a teacher needs. And that is really an hour-long, it's a much more contained unit. It's an hour-long unit that introduces you to the issues and to two of the girls' stories, and has an additional three projects. We call them the Do More projects, which take you beyond the basic Girl Rising learning and ask really to look a little more inward. So one of those, for example, is looking at the sort of educational history of your own family. Because what I find is most of us have a Girl Rising pretty near. Like my grandmother was a Girl Rising, came over as a very young girl, had to drop out of school before graduating from high school to help support her family, became a sort of an autodidact, self-taught by going to museums and libraries and lectures and, you know, just learning all the time, right? But I think I'm always so interested when I ask young people, you know, sort of, have you ever talked to your parents or your grandparents about their education? Did your grandparents graduate from whatever? And so often they don't know.
I think it's a
really, really interesting conversation. And it's a wonderful way also of just getting kids to talk to their parents and grandparents and mm-hmm. learn the history. But I think they'll find that they're never too far removed, even those who think they are, right, for the most part. So that's one of them. And there are, you know, a few research projects and things like that. Then we have a young adult book, which is the only thing that's not free because the publisher won't let us make it free. And that has the stories of the girls, but it also expands upon their stories beyond what's in the film. as well as expanding upon the issues of things like early marriage and gender violence and that. Then we have, I mentioned earlier, Flipgrid, which is our the newest platform we're on, which has now 30 and soon to be 50 girl writing topics, and is a very interesting and very, very easy way to incorporate girl rising. We are about to be on another online platform called Explorer, but that hasn't launched yet. The core to everything we do are those stories.
Right.
They are everything. And everything else revolves around them.
I'm sorry, I keep trying to cut you off.
No, that's okay.
What are you guys going to be on Explorer?
It's a new platform that comes out of something called Project Explorer, and they're creating six lessons of their own around the films.
And then you have the Teen Rising, right?
That's the online module. That was the web-based module called Teens Rising, exactly. And that, as you know, that ends up in what I think is this really exciting social media project.
Right, and that's the one I started with. And
yeah.
I'll say 100%. I found out about it on Sunday evening, and I implemented it on Monday morning.
What was it that you found so striking about it? What made you do that?
Well, I watched Wadley's chapter, and I was just finishing up an entire unit on being a digital leader. And I was I have a project that we had done where using social media for social good, what can we, do with that? I watched her video. I read through the lesson plan, and I was like, I can put this in tomorrow morning. Like, scrap whatever I have in my lesson plans already. This is what we're doing. And I believe like the lesson plan is, an hour long I stretched it out because I just felt like I wanted to dive a little deeper, and I wanted to really tie it back into being a digital leader, using social media, or just using your digital life for good. And how could we do that? And it was like I said, just watching that. And then watching Suma's after that, after Wally's, I said it in the beginning, it touched my soul. Like it was like me. And I think for Joe, it was October of 2019. We went and saw Dr. Jennifer Williams speak at a conference, and Joe and I, like the next day, we're talking to each other, and this is what we are doing. Like, this is, the SDGs are so important to bring in, and Girl Rising was the same way for me. Like, this.
How did your students respond?
They loved it. There was a passion, right? Because it, like I said before, it was school. They can all relate. And there was a passion and a purpose. They knew that what we were creating, the memes that they were creating, were getting shared out. And they knew it was going to go to a wider audience, and they knew it was going to be bringing attention to something that they saw that they were shocked by. I mean, we're in a small rural community in Southern New Jersey, right? So we're about 45 minutes to an hour east of Philadelphia. We're about an hour and a half to 2 hours south of New York. And it's not a worldview that they get to explore very often. So I think
a lot of times the kids don't make it out of the
town.
Our town.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that, like, just that worldview, and like, holy smokes, there's a girl who was somebody's slave. Like, they were like gobsmacked, like that was actually happening. So I think just how engaged they were, and that there was passion and purpose to what they were doing. And I think I see that I'm doing it again right now. And I see that as well. And I adjusted a little bit this time to offer a little bit more choice. But, I'm so excited for where this is going to go next year when I'm actually in my classroom, because I have an amazing room of equipment. I have large format printers where we could do banners, we could do stickers, we can do t-shirts, we can do, I have sublimation printers where we can do mugs. And like, so there's so much more that we can spread the word and it again, have that purpose.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that's what, you know, for us, I think that, you know, two things that you're talking about come to mind that are important for us. One is, yes, we created this module for during the age of COVID so that educators had something they could do in this, you know, sort of 60-minute time frame that was easy for them to do, but could be spread out as you've done, could be pulled apart, could be made in more. And the other thing that's really, really important to us, because remember, this all started as a campaign, as part of a movement, is the action piece, right?
Right.
We always encourage anyone who uses Girl Rising to have some action at the end. And it doesn't really matter what it is. Mm-hmm. It could be just going home and talking to your family.
Right.
It could be, you know, hosting a school screening. It could be creating public art. It could be doing any number of things, but it doesn't really matter what. It's just that idea of taking action and using your voice and understanding you can be part of something bigger and that you can look around you and see what needs changing.
Yeah.
And get involved. So, you know, so we, you know, our issue is girls' education. But I think you can use Girl Rising just, you know, to inspire action for any issue that matters to you, your family, your community, your country, whatever.
Yeah. And I love the idea of like even taking, you know, a step back and looking at your community. Where's the inequity? Where's the Girl Rising moment in your community? Or in your state or country, you know, like it can go to so many different levels, the inequities that are there that you might see.
I mean, one of the things that we're thinking really hard about now is how to develop some resources that get, that allow teachers to, I say, bring, you know, bring what they've, what the kids have learned about over there home to look at us here. In other words, what are our educational inequity issues here? Sure. Does everyone have equal education? What are the barriers to a good education here? Right. And that's sort of inward looking, because I think sometimes it's much easier to start the conversation with them there and bring it home than it is to look inward to begin with. Right. Because I think we all tend to be defensive. That's just human nature. Right.
Yep.
And it's much easier to start the conversation. Like we used to be very interested in, we thought, for example, in India, they would want to just see the India chapter most, for example. And, you know, what we were told oftentimes is by looking at child marriage in the Ethiopia story, it became easier to talk about it in India as well, because they didn't feel like they're the only ones with this problem.
Right. And you're not talking about something you've done wrong.
Right. Right. You're talking about a thing that's out there and that people are struggling with and grappling with. And isn't that interesting that it's not only happening here, but it's also happening there. By the same token, I often get, one of the things we do want to happen, but also makes me nervous, is for kids to sort of to understand the value of their own education and care deeply about their own education and understand the good fortune they have. Yet, I get very uneasy when educators will say to me, oh, the kids now understand how lucky they are, how they have a free education, this and that. And I think that's all true and that's wonderful. But I also want them to understand that the quality of education varies for very complicated reasons in this country. Right. And it's not as easy as that. It's not as pat as that. So yes, we are very lucky that we all not only have the right to an education, but it's legally mandated that we get an education, right? But we're not all in the same ballpark. And when you start really digging into them, it gets to be really interesting and really important in that sort of reflection, self-reflection, reflection about our own country and about our own issues of equity. And I think that's always really important. Otherwise, you end up talking about them all the time as if...
Right.
And no, we have our share of problems and they're very profound. So I let, you know, we've been thinking a lot about how to, you know, sort of help bring it home without getting off base or without getting off track.
Right.
But yet using the power of those stories also to allow for reflection about.
Yeah. And you could see kids doing that just, you know, like looking at special education within their right. building.
Right.
Right. Exactly. You know, simple things like that.
Yeah. Right. And the issues could be are often very, very different. And that's fine. It's not saying it's the same as that. It's just, what is it?
Right.
What are the barriers here? Are there barriers here? What are they? What do they mean? What's the impact they have? Who is getting an education? Who's dropping out of school? Why are they dropping out of school?
Right. Well, you even see it as, I was going to say, like, you could even have students take a look at dress code.
Right, yeah.
Right now in the news is the high school in Florida where all the graduation pictures were doctored in Photoshop doctored in Photoshop for the girls because some of the graduating seniors had a little bit of cleavage showing. And sometimes the Photoshop is horrifically clumsy.
I missed that story completely.
Yeah, it's out there now. Yeah, I think it's like 80 some girls in this high school in Florida.
There are a lot of issues that are interesting. I think, you know, I don't think you have to make them apples and apples. That's not what you're trying to do. It gives you an interesting sort of backdrop to exploring things at home.
Yeah, it's conversation starters.
Yeah.
In the classroom.
Yeah. Those are tough questions.
They are tough questions.
When you start to take that self-reflection process, you have to be okay with, right?
Well, that is the other thing. And that's what, you know, when we're thinking and talking internally about what we want to do and how we want to do it, that's one of the things we're thinking about. Because, you know, that's not really what we do, right? That's not what we teach. That's not what we do. And so we're not going to be doing something really in depth. So we have to be careful, too, at what we launch.
Right.
You know, or what we're asking teachers to launch. So it's an interesting process. And I think naturally a lot of that happens anyway. You know, a lot of that naturally the kids start thinking about their own worlds and their own schools and their own education. And naturally good educators start, you know, raise some questions that just flow out of the other stories and conversations.
Right. Now, besides education, like, you know, what can people do if they're not in education? You know, does Girl Rising take donations? You know,
we certainly do take donations. Folks can certainly donate to Girl Rising. You can learn about everything Girl Rising just on our website, girlrising.org. We certainly take donations. There are our partner organizations take donations. There are organizations all over the place doing really fine work. So if it's an issue that someone's interested in, you know, a specific issue, like I was just doing some research today and looking on the website of an organization called Girls Not Brides, which does a lot of work about child marriage. So if that's the kind of thing one is interested in, I think money is always important, but I think also educating is important, using that term loosely now, not talking about schools and educators. Educating is really important.
There's an organization out there called Girls Not Brides. I mean, that's when Ron said you touched a piece of his, or the movie touched a piece of, like, that kind of just took a piece of my heart away. I guess I'm not educated enough about the horrific things that are going on.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that's interesting, and I always encourage both students and teachers to do it. If you're teaching one of these stories about child marriage, take a look at our laws in this country. They're pathetic. They're state by state, and some of them are just unimaginable.
Even as far as what the statutory rate ages and some of the states, it's pretty sad. So I guess, you're right. Besides looking out there.
Yeah. I mean, because in many cases out there where there are a lot more child marriages, they actually have a stronger law in the book, you know, which is ironic. I mean, because there obviously is a difference about, you know, what's on the books and what is enforced. And how much, you know, so there's still a lot of issues. It's not that clean cut, but it still is very surprising when you look at our law state by state, it's unexpected. But to go back to, so I think, you know, educating yourself, educating others, I think supporting policy change is important. I think, you know, screening the film is a great way of getting people educated and knowledgeable. We've worked with many organizations, including, for example, law firms and corporations who will have arranged for lunchtime screenings, partial screenings of the film for their staff, or law firms that will have evening events for partners and their children with screening events. So there are a lot of things you can do to raise awareness,
yep,
which is the first step towards action. So, you know,
is on my list for next year, trying to get a screening going, you know, at our school.
And well, and it's also great. It's a great way for kids to take leadership role. Let them arrange the screening. Let them decide to have a panel conversation afterwards. And who are they going to invite? Who are they going to talk to? You know, all of that kind of stuff. And it gives them, invite the community in.
Yep.
You know, own it. So we see that a lot.
You know, have merchandise that the students have created.
Oh, that would be the coolest thing ever.
Right. We can have the merchandise, because I run an entrepreneur club.
Oh my gosh. You could put all these pieces together. How great.
Exactly. And then with the entrepreneur club, it's all about social entrepreneurship. So we donate our profits to organize. So we do a screening, we sell stuff that the students create it. That gets donated back to Girl Rising.
That's fantastic. I mean,
that's my hope. You know,
that sounds unbelievable. And you know, it's interesting. Can you go back to the sort of social media idea? So, in Quincy and some other places, they've done things where they have events where they have screenings, but they also then use that as an opportunity to hang all these incredible projects.
Right.
And not only the sort of posters and things, but also, you know, the video games that kids have created, and they're all there explaining what they've done. There's one project one girl did, which was quite amazing. This was in Texas, where she's first generation. She had found all her mother's report cards, and her mother had like all straight A's until sixth grade, seventh grade, whatever it was, when she had to leave school. And so she built this whole thing around this idea that her mother was a star student and never got to pursue it.
Right.
Another person, what did he do? Also in Texas, he created a playlist of music that was meaningful based on what he had learned.
Yeah. That'd be good. Yeah. Right. A Spotify playlist or something.
Yeah. Yeah, and he had an explanation for each song, why it was meaningful, why he chose it, why he put it in. There was this other cool video game these kids created in Atlanta, where I think it's on their website still. But it was girls had to overcome these barriers to get to school. So the first part, the first phase was a maze they had to get through, and not very hard, get through the maze. The second part was one of those things where, you know, you have those little things that you catch them as they're falling down.
Right. Yeah.
That was the third one. No, the first one was you had to get through these three men. So the men were going up and down, and you had to get through before they, you know, landed on you or whatever. So that was phase two. And the last phase was the one where you had to be caught before, you had to catch them before they fall out of school, basically.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And
yeah.
But if they get through that, they arrive at a schoolhouse.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It was very cool. That was very, very cool.
That's right.
My point just being the creativity is enormous. So if you have a screening, you can also create that as part of the event around it. And the other thing always to keep in mind is you don't have to do the full screening. If you didn't want to do the full film, you could do the half hour version, or you could do a 5-chapter version. So that would leave, because the film's 97 minutes long, which can be long, right? If you want to do other stuff.
Right.
So if you did want to have stuff before or after, you could also, I mean, there are lots of ways to go.
Yeah, Joe and I are hopefully running the media club next year.
Is there anything you two don't do? Seriously, we've got the entrepreneur club, we've got the merchandise, we've got the media club, we've got teacher nerds, we've got your classes, your regular classes.
Plus he trains dogs on the
weekend. I know,
weekend.
I was going to say, and he trains dogs, which may be the most important thing, by the way.
He does free puppy seminars. I don't think Ron sleeps.
Well, if I ever get another dog, it'll be coming your way.
Hey, anytime you let me know. So I guess as we kind of wrap up, one of the things that, you know, a question that sadly I had on, you know, talking points was, you know, is there still a need for people to be educated and involved? And it was, I mean, literally probably 2 or 3 days after I wrote that, that there was the bombing in Afghanistan outside of the schoolhouse there.
Yeah. So there are a few answers to that. One is, and let's talk pre-COVID anyway, that there was, there has been almost, we're almost even in primary school between girls and boys. I mean, it's basically even. It's reached that level. But then you start to see the drop off in adolescence.
Right.
In some countries more than others. So, yes, there still is that. And aside from Afghanistan, you know, you can look in northern Nigeria with Boko Haram.
Right.
And the girls that are kidnapped there. And we've seen, and we did see the bombing at the school in Afghanistan. You know, in Afghanistan now, there are millions of girls in school, all of which has happened since the Taliban fell. But in regions where the Taliban is in control, there are still, you know, significant areas where girls are not allowed in school and aren't being educated. But, you know, I think everyone is hopeful that facts have been established.
Right.
In Afghanistan now, and there are a lot of educated girls who aren't prepared not to be educated.
Right.
And there are a lot of women who aren't prepared to see their daughters not educated. And there are a lot of men now. I mean, there really are a lot of men who believe in their daughters and believe in education and will fight for it. You know, it's hard to know exactly what's going to happen. And I think there's probably a lot of unease about what's going to happen on a whole lot of levels.
Right.
But certainly insofar as women and girls are concerned. But I think we have to be hopeful that we're in a somewhat different time and it's going to be hard to turn back the clock completely.
They have some allies fighting for them.
That's also assuming that, you know, the Taliban will strengthen, and we can hope it doesn't, but it, you know, it's likely that it will regain some strength anyway, but the women and girls are stronger too, and I think they have more allies amongst the men and, you know, the leadership and that sort of thing. One can hope. And they're a tradition of strong women in Afghanistan. And so I think that will continue.
You just saying that hope reminded me, we had talked a few weeks ago and you had had a quote that I had written down and it's, hope is the strongest form of bravery.
Yes, yes. And now I can't remember where I read that. I thought that was amazing. Right. But yeah, I mean, I just thought I thought immediately, of course, of Afghanistan with that.
Right.
And when you think about it, I mean, that's really, to me, really profound.
Yeah.
Because it's true to when there seems to be no hope, to hope is an incredible act of bravery. Yeah.
Heaviest podcast yet, Ron.
I was going to say, and I think that's a perfect way to kind of wrap up the show end with that quote. Casey, I can't thank you enough for, you know, taking the time to talk with us and to just talking to you is just, it's a joy every time I get to talk to you. So I really appreciate it.
Well, as I've said before, I can talk about Girl Rising forever. And I have become, as you now know, a complete educator groupie. So I can talk to teachers forever. And I love what you guys do. And I really look forward to continuing to partner with you and support the work you're doing in any way we can. And we look forward to showcasing it all as well, but also to continue to come up with cool ideas for how to do more.
Yeah, I would love it.
So. We appreciate you.
Teacher nerds knocking on your door. Open up, let's take your teaching further than before. Give it a try, don't be shy, there's nothing there to lose. Worst thing that happens, kids get pain on their shoes. We're talking teacher nerds.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Teacher Nerds Podcast. Keep up with every new episode by subscribing on Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Podcast, Anchor, or anywhere you listen. When you subscribe, be sure to give us a review and tell a friend. Visit us at teachernerds.com. Follow us on Twitter at teachernerds, on Instagram at teachernerdspodcast, or email us teachernerds@gmail.com. And remember, we're nerds with a Z. Most importantly, thank you for listening and becoming one of the Teacher Nerds.